radio flyer. Luther got it balanced, though, and watched it for a moment. "You sit here," he said, pointing to a tiny spot in the wagon and under the tree. "Keep it from tipping over. I'll push." "You think this'll work?" Spike said, with great suspicion. Across the street, Ned Becker had been minding his own business when he saw the tree disappear from the Trogdon's front window. 5 minutes passed, and the tree reappeared in the open garage where a man and a kid were wrestling with it. He looked harder and recognized Luther Crank. Watching every move, he called Walt Scheel on a portable phone. "Hey, Walt, Ned here. Merry Christmas, Ned." "Merry Christmas, Walt." "Say, I'm watching the Trogdon's house, and it appears as if Crank has lost his mind." "How's that?" "He's stealing their Christmas tree." Luther and Spike began their way down the Trogdon driveway, which had a slight decline to the street. Luther was behind the wagon, hanging on, letting it roll slightly. Spike clutched the trunk of the tree, terrified. Scheel peeked out his front door, and when he saw the theft with his own eyes, he punched the number for the police. The desk sergeant answered. "Yes, this is Walt Scheel, 1481 Hemlock. There's a burglary underway right now." "Where?" "Right here at 1483 Hemlock. I'm watching it in progress. Hurry." Trogdon's tree made it across Hemlock to the other side, right in front of the Becker house, where now in the front window Ned, his wife Jude, and his mother-in-law were watching. Luther negotiated a right turn with the handle and began pulling the wagon toward his house. He wanted to sprint before anyone saw him, but Spike kept telling him to take it slow. Luther was afraid to look around. He didn't believe for a second that he was going unnoticed. When he was almost to his driveway, Spike said, "Cops!" Luther wheeled around just as the patrol car slowed to a stop in the middle of the street, lights flashing but no siren. Two officers jumped out as if it were a SWAT mission. Luther recognized Celino with the large stomach, then young Treen with the thick neck, the same two had stopped by hawking calendars for the Police Benevolent Association. "Hello, Mr. Crank," Celino said with a smirk.
"Hello."
"Where are you going with that?" asked Treen.
"To my house," Luther said, pointing.
He'd come so close.
"Maybe you better explain," said Celino.
"Yeah, well, Wes Trogdon over there let me borrow his Christmas tree. He left town an hour ago, and me and Spike here were just moving it."
"Spike?"
Luther turned and looked behind him, down at the wagon at the narrow gap where Spike had been. Spike was gone, nowhere to be seen on Hemlock.
"Yeah, a kid down the street."
Walt Scheel had a seat on the 50-yard line. Bev was resting, or trying to. His laughter got so loud that she came to see what was the matter.
"Pull up a chair, honey. They caught Crank stealing a tree."
The Beckers were howling, too.
"We got a report that a burglary was in progress," said Treen.
"There's no burglary. Who called?"
"A Mr. Scheel. Whose wagon is this?"
"I don't know. Spike's."
"So you stole the wagon, too," said Treen.
"I've stolen nothing."
"You have to admit, Mr. Crank, it looks very suspicious," Celino said.
Yes, under normal circumstances, Luther might be forced to say that the entire scene was a bit unusual, but Blair was getting closer by the minute, and there was no time to back down.
"Not at all, sir. I borrow Trogdon's tree all the time."
"We better take you in for questioning," Treen said, and unsnapped a pair of handcuffs from his belt. The sight of the silver cuffs sent Walt Scheel to the floor. The Beckers were having trouble breathing, and Luther went weak at the knees.
"Come on, you can't be serious."
"Get in the back seat."
Luther sat low in the back, thinking of suicide for the first time in his life. The two cops in the front seat were chatting on the radio, something about finding the owner of the stolen property. Their lights were still swirling, and Luther wanted to say so much.
"Let me go. I'll sue. Turn off the damn lights. Next year I'll buy 10 calendars. Just go ahead and shoot me."
If Nora came home now, she'd file for divorce. The Kirby twins were 8-year-old delinquents from the far end of Hemlock, and for some reason, they happened by. They walked close to the car, close to the rear window, and made direct eye contact with Luther, who squirmed even lower. Then the Bellington brat joined them, and all three peered in at Luther as if he'd killed their mothers. Spike came running, followed by Vic Frohmeyer. The officers got out and had a word with him. Then Treen shooed the kids away and released Luther from the back seat.
"He's got keys," Vic was saying.
and Luther then remembered that he did indeed have the keys to Trogdon's. What a moron.
I know both these men, Fromar continued. This is no burglary.
The cops whispered for a moment as Luther tried to ignore the stares from Vic and Spike. He glanced around, half expecting to see Nora wheel into the drive and have a stroke.
What about the tree? Celino asked Vic.
If he says Trogdon loaned it to him, then that's the truth.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Okay, okay, Celino said, still sneering at Luther as if he'd never seen a guiltier criminal. They slowly got in the car and drove away.
Thanks, Luther said.
What are you doing, Luther? Vic asked.
I'm borrowing their tree. Spike's helping me move it. Let's go, Spike.
Without further interruption, Luther and Spike rolled the tree up the driveway, into the garage, and grappled with it until it was sitting rather nicely in the front window. Along the way, they left a trail of dead needles, red and green icicles, and some popcorn.
I'll vacuum later, Luther said. Let's check the lights.
The phone rang. It was Nora, more panicked than before.
I can't find a thing, Luther. No turkey, no ham, no chocolates, nothing. And I can't find a nice gift, either.
Gifts? Why are you shopping for gifts?
It's Christmas, Luther. Have you called the Yarbers and Friskies?
Yes, he lied. Their lines were busy.
Keep calling, Luther, because no one is coming. I've tried the McTeers, Morris's, and Warner's. They're all busy.
How's the tree?
Coming along. I'll call later.
Spike plugged in the lights, and the tree came to life. They attacked the 9 boxes of decorations without a care as to what went where. Across the street, Walt Scheel watched them through binoculars. 15. Spike was on the ladder, leaning precariously into the tree with a crystal angel in one hand and a fuzzy reindeer in the other, when Luther heard a car in the drive. He glanced out the window and saw Nora's Audi sliding into the garage.
"It's Nora," he said.
Quick thinking led him to believe that Spike's complicity in the tree should be kept a secret.
"Spike, you need to leave, and now," he said.
"Why?"
"Job's over, son. Here's the other 20. Thanks a million."
He helped the kid down from the ladder, handed over the cash, and led him to the front door. When Nora stepped into the kitchen, Spike eased onto the front steps and disappeared.
"Unload the car," she commanded.
Her nerves were shot and she was ready to snap.
"What's the matter?" he asked, and immediately wished he'd said nothing.
It was quite obvious what was the matter. She rolled her eyes and started to snap, then gritted her teeth and repeated, "Unload the car." Luther high-stepped toward the door and was almost outside when he heard,
"What an ugly tree!"
He spun, ready for war, and said, "Take it or leave it."
"Red lights?" she said, her voice incredulous.
Trogdon had used a strand of red lights, one solitary string of them, and had wrapped them tightly around the trunk of the tree. Luther had toyed with the idea of pulling them off, but it would have taken an hour. Instead, he and Spike had tried to hide them with ornaments. Nora, of course, had spotted them from the kitchen. Now she had her nose in the tree.
"Red lights? We've never used red lights."
"They were in the box," Luther lied.
He did not enjoy lying, but he knew it would be standard behavior for the next day or so.
"Which box?"
"What do you mean, which box? I've been throwing stuff in the tree as fast as I can open boxes, Nora. Now is not the time to get touchy about the tree."
"Green icicles?" she said, picking one off the tree. "Where'd you find this tree?"
"I bought the last one from the Boy Scouts."
A sidestep, not a direct lie. She looked around the room at the strewn and empty boxes and decided there were more important things to worry about.
"Besides," Luther said unwisely, "at the rate we're going, who's going to see it?"
"Shut up and unload the car."
There were 4 bags of food from a store Luther had never heard of, 3 shopping bags with handles from a clothing store in the mall, a case of soft drinks, a case of bottled water, and a bouquet of dreadful flowers from a florist known for his outrageous prices. Luther's accountant's brain wanted to tally up the damage, but he thought better of it. How would he explain this around the office? All the money he'd saved now up in smoke. Plus the cruise he didn't take getting wasted because he declined to purchase travel insurance. Luther was in the middle of a financial disaster and couldn't do a thing to stop the bleeding.
"Did you get the Yarbers and the Friskies?"
Nora asked at the phone. The receiver stuck to her head.
"Yes, they can't come."
"Unpack those grocery bags," she demanded,
then said into the phone, "Sue, it's Nora. Merry Christmas. Look, we've just had a big surprise over here.
Blair's coming home with her fiancé. Be here tonight, and we're running around like crazy trying to put together a last-minute party.
Pause.
Peru. Thought we wouldn't see her till next Christmas.
Pause.
Yes, quite a surprise.
Pause.
Yes, fiancé.
Pause.
He's a doctor.
Pause.
He's from down there somewhere, Peru, I think. She just met him 3 weeks ago, and now they're getting married, so needless to say, we're in shock. So tonight...
Pause.
Luther removed 8 pounds of smoked Oregon trout, all packed in airtight, thick cellophane wrappers, the type that gave the impression the fish had been caught years ago. Sounds like a nice party, Nora was saying. Sorry you can't make it. Yes, I'll give a hug to Blair. Merry Christmas, Sue. She hung up and took a deep breath. With the worst possible timing, Luther said, "Smoked trout?" "Either that or frozen pizza," she fired back with glowing eyes and clenched fists. "There's not a turkey or a ham left in the stores, and even if I found one, there's not enough time to cook it. So yes, Luther, Mr. Beachbum, we're having smoked trout for Christmas." The phone rang, and Nora snatched it. "Hello, yes, Emily, how are you? Thanks for returning my call." Luther couldn't think of a single person named Emily. He pulled out a 3-pound block of cheddar cheese, a large wedge of Swiss, boxes of crackers, clam dip, and 3 2-day-old chocolate pies from a bakery Nora had always avoided. She was rattling on about their last-minute party when suddenly she said, "You can come, that's wonderful. Around 7-ish, casual, sort of a come-and-go."
Pause.
"Your parents? Sure they can come. The more the merrier. Great, Emily, see you in a bit." She hung up without a smile.
"Emily who?"
"Emily Underwood."
Luther dropped a box of crackers. "No," he said. She was suddenly interested in unpacking the last bag of groceries. "You didn't, Nora," he said. "Tell me you didn't invite Mitch Underwood. Not here, not to our house. You didn't, Nora, please say you didn't."
"We're desperate."
"Not that desperate.
I like Emily. She's a witch, and you know it. You like her? When's the last time you had lunch with her, or breakfast, or coffee, or anything?"
"We need bodies, Luther."
"Mitch the Mouth is not a body, he's a windbag, a thundering load of hot air. People hide from the Underwoods, Nora. Why?"
"They're coming. Be thankful."
"They're coming because nobody in their right mind would invite them to a social occasion. They're always free."
"Hand me that cheese. This is a joke, right?"
"He'll be good with Enrique."
"Enrique'll never again set foot in the United States after Underwood gets through with him. He hates everything. The city, the state, Democrats, Republicans, independents, clean air, you name it. He's the biggest bore in the world. He'll get half drunk and you can hear him 2 blocks over."
"Settle down, Luther. It's done. Speaking of drinking, I didn't have time to get the wine. You'll have to go."
"I'm not leaving the safety of my home."
"Yes, you are. I didn't see Frosty."
"I'm not doing Frosty. I've made up my mind."
"Yes, you are."
The phone rang again, and Nora grabbed it.
"Who could this be?" Luther muttered to himself. "Can't get any worse."
"Blair!" Nora said. "Hello, dear."
"Give me the phone," Luther kept muttering. "I'll send him back to Peru."
"You're in Atlanta. Great!" Nora said.
Pause.
"We're just cooking away, dear, getting ready for the party."
Pause.
"We're excited, too, dear. Can't wait."
Pause.
"Of course I'm making a caramel cream pie. Your favorite."
She shot Luther a look of horror.
"Yes, honey. We'll be at the airport at 6. Love you."
Luther glanced at his watch. 3 o'clock. She hung up and said, "I need 2 pounds of caramel and a jar of marshmallow cream."
"I'll finish the tree. It still needs more ornaments," Luther said. "I'm not fighting the mobs."
Nora chewed a fingernail for a second and assessed things. This meant a plan was coming, probably one with a lot of detail.
"Let's do this," she began. "Let's finish decorating by 4. How long will Frosty take?"
3 days.
"At 4, I'll make the final run to town, and you get Frosty up on the roof. Meanwhile, we'll go through the phone book and call everybody we've ever met."
"Don't tell anyone Underwood's coming."
"Hush, Luther."
"Smoked trout with Mitch Underwood. That'll be the hottest ticket in town."
Nora put on a Sinatra Christmas CD, and for 20 minutes Luther flung more ornaments on Trogdon's tree, while Nora set out candles and ceramic Santas and decorated the fireplace mantel with plastic holly and mistletoe. They said nothing to each other for a long time. Then Nora broke the ice with more instructions. "These boxes can go back to the attic." Of all the things Luther hated about Christmas, perhaps the most dreaded chore was hauling boxes up and down the retractable stairs of the attic. up the staircase to the second floor, then wedge into the narrow hallway between two bedrooms, then readjust position so that the box, which was inevitably too big, could be shoved up the flimsy ladder through the opening to the attic. Coming down or going up, it didn't matter. It was a miracle he'd avoided serious injury over the years. "And after that, start bringing Frosty up," she barked like an admiral. She leaned hard on Reverend Zabriskie, and he finally said he could stop by for half an hour. Luther at gunpoint called his secretary, Docs, and twisted her arm until she agreed to stop by for a few minutes. Docs had been married 3 times, was currently unmarried, but always had a boyfriend of some variety. The two of them, plus Reverend and Mrs. Zabriskie, plus the Underwood group, totaled an optimistic 8. If they all converged at the same time, 12 altogether with the Cranks and Blair and Enrique, 12 almost made Nora cry again. 12 would seem like 3 in their living room on Christmas Eve. She called her 2 favorite wine stores. One was closed, the other would be open for a half hour.